Well, let's talk about the CFL and TSN, and from the play-by-play booth, Rod Smith is here. Rod, how are you today, sir?
Good, Jim. Nice to get ready for another game, and it's a beautiful night here at Tim Hortons Field. So good to talk to you guys.
Oh, you are literally in the booth getting set.
I am.
Well, yeah, so, absolutely. I mean, these two teams play each other four times in 5 weeks. That's a little much, isn't it?
It is to me. I mean, and especially the last one is on Labor Day. Last year they played three times, and it was spread out over a shortened season. You know, it didn't even start until early August, and their first meeting was on Labor Day Monday, at least. And, of course, they played again in the Eastern Final. But, I mean, how you had a shortened season with that rivalry spread out over the same number of games. And this one, for them, there are a few quirks of this. You know, I say it politely about the schedule this year that I didn't quite get. And this is one of them, because it's a great rivalry, but I don't know how things are going to be when they play for the fourth time in 5 weeks on the traditional rivalry day on Labor Day Monday.
Okay, well, let's deal with the football angle here. As I'm led to believe, when you play the same team twice, when you're structuring your playbook, you have to hide things for the second game. But when you're playing them four times in 5 weeks, that's a real challenge, isn't it?
I can't imagine anything new. That would really be something if they're saving it, you know, say for a Labor Day game for four times in 5 days. But no, you're right. Sometimes in back-to-backs, you do get a bit of that. But I don't think there will be any mystery between these two. And if it was a hated rivalry before, I can only imagine the tension by early September when they play for the fourth time in 5 days.
So, Rod, obviously big game tonight, Toronto-Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field. Last night, a big moment in any season when a team that hadn't lost in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers finally showed a little bit of humanity and dropped one in overtime to the Montreal Alouettes in Winnipeg 2017. Field goal kicking this one, a big reason for the result. What's going on with CFL field goal kickers this year, Rod?
Well, it's an interesting question, Dave. I feel for them all because it's a lot of the stuff is taken for granted inside the 30. And you're right. We had David Cote of the Alouettes, so I'm sure last night could feel the pain of Mark Leggio because he had the victory on his foot against the Argos back in week two from 21 yards, and he missed it left. And then you had Boris Beattie against Winnipeg to possibly force overtime on an extra point. So that would have been a 32-yarder.
Yeah.
And he put it wide left. Both of those were at BMO, and then you had what Leggio did, not only last night, which was to win it, but then, you know, maybe compensating, pushing it more to the right in overtime that would have extended that game and then hitting the upright. So he was, what, 18 of 20 or 19 of 21 hitting into that kick that could have won it for them. The percentages have not been that bad. But you're right. I can't recall a season where so many what look like gimme kicks or ones you'd assume that CFL kickers would make have missed them. And not in situations where the wind was ridiculous or it was in the middle of a rainstorm or something like that. I mean, very makeable kicks, and it's puzzling. And what a way for the winning streak for the Bombers to come to an end as well. But there's still a lot of great kickers in the CFL.
Right.
But we've had some moments that have been less than that, to be sure.
Yeah, so maybe the year of the missed kicks, but it should have been the year of the hash mark move and how people have exploited that. What have you seen that way?
Well, I've asked a few people about it just to see. One conversation we had was the Z receiver, the field side wideout. Like the best case example is probably Curly Gittens because he's still the top receiver for the Argos. And one of the best young Canadian receivers in the CFL has been just getting a lot more, you know, catches. He's getting a lot more targets this year. And we were wondering, is it because, you know, the wide side of the field isn't as wide? But any coach I've talked to about it doesn't think that that's it at all. You know, McLeod Bethel-Thompson has a strong arm. He knows Gittens is a good receiver, and he's been willing to throw that longer ball. And it's worked out well. From what I have, you know, talking to people that know more about the finer points, the X's and O's of football than I do, maybe it's been exaggerated a bit what kind of difference moving the hash marks in has made. You know, the wide side's not as wide, the boundary side is not as narrow, and so you can be a little more creative offensively. But I have not heard anyone definitively say that this has made offense a lot better. This has created a lot more opportunities.
So a little bit of social media buzz, Rod, from Chad Johnson, sometimes known as Ocho Cinco to some.
Yeah.
sort of on a podcast talking about his time in the CFL and really waxing eloquently and pretty enthusiastically about the level of play in the CFL. And I guess those of us who watch the game regularly, you know, we're like, duh, it's obviously played by some great athletes. But what does that do for the sport, for the league, to have a player with that kind of a social media following and that kind of a presence sort of hype it up in that way?
I think it's neat, and he's not the first to do it. There have been others, you know, that have played in the CFL, some successfully, some. And like in his case, he wasn't up in the CFL for long, and I think he found it a lot tougher than he expected. But I think it's nice to hear, it's nice to read, because I personally, loving both leagues as I do, but being born and raised on the CFL, have seen so many great athletes in this league, and it's nice to see them get the recognition, especially if people read about it or hear about it, that might have the preconceived notion that everything about the NFL, every single thing, is absolutely better. Yes, it's bigger and there are great, great athletes, but there are a lot of very good athletes, great athletes in the CFL as well, and it's nice to hear someone that knows both leagues, at least came up and gave the CFL a shot late in his career when he was no longer, you know, in the NFL, of course. I think it's nice to see. It's nice to see the league get some recognition that way.
I mean, maybe we can make the point that the CFL is the best league or the most fun to play, because I think there's more player input than the other leagues. Would you agree with that?
I think, once again, that's something I hear, and I just judge it, you know, as someone who watches it and likes the differences. Even though I like the NFL, I do like the differences about it. I like the tempo, the pace on the 20-second clock, and I don't mind the three downs because of, you know, the greater importance and involvement of special teams, the punt returns, things like that. Not that, you know, you don't want to see a game entirely a two and out and punting. I don't mean that, but there are just certain characteristics about the CFL and all the comebacks we've been seeing this year too, that no lead appears to be safe, that I've really enjoyed. I've never been one for comparisons. You'd never hear me, you know, trash the NFL and say the CFL is better. I enjoy them both. There are different brands of football. There are obviously, you know, things in common, aspects of the game, blocking and tackling and passing and running and all those things. But I still do enjoy the differences, and I'm glad to see, despite all the talk in the offseason of proposals and ideas to, you know, maybe Americanize the game further and the questions about the number of downs, I'm old school that way, and I like the league to stay the way it is. And I think this year so far, compared to last year, which understandably suffered, I think, from very limited training camps, no preseason games, and they kind of had to hit the ground running in a shortened season. I think it's been more dramatic this year. There's been some really exciting games.
I don't know if you saw the clip, Rod, speaking a little bit about the NFL, but sort of, you know, relaying it to your line of work. Washington Commanders president Jason Wright was critical of a reporter who was questioning Carson Wentz, of course, the Commanders' quarterback, and the question, the line of questioning was essentially, Carson Wentz, you know, you've been right out of Philly, you know, you didn't have a good year in Indy, and now you're in Washington, and essentially, you know, is this your last chance to sort of prove yourself as a legitimate NFL quarterback? I didn't think it was out of line. The president of the Commanders, you know, insinuated that this reporter would have difficulty getting access in the future, and really was uncomplimentary of the style of the interview. How do you approach that type of stuff, Rod? When you're trying to ask, you know, what most people would consider reasonable questions, well, of course, towing the line of being, good TV and friendly enough to the guests to have them on again.
I don't think it's an unfair line of questioning, just listening to you talk about it, Dave, and you well know, too, and all the athletes that you've interviewed, that sometimes I think you have a responsibility to ask a question if other people are thinking it, and it's reasonable. I think that's a reasonable question given what Carson Wentz has been through in his career, and I think he would have a good way of answering. I don't know how he answered that question, but I don't think that that's unfair. I mean, it might be unfair to you know, ask Tom Brady if he thinks he'll ever win another Super Bowl. Like, well, even that question I don't think is unreasonable now, but, you know, I guess some athletes, based on all the success they've had on the field, might deserve or get more benefit of the doubt. But I think I don't know where the line is drawn. I certainly don't think that question is over the line. Yeah. But You know, I think within reason, if people, you know, if it's a fairly obvious story and a lot of people are wondering about it, I don't see the harm in asking that question, because the athlete has the power to, or the coach or whoever you're talking about, it certainly has the power, you know, as long as their answer isn't being edited out or tampered with or anything like that, to, even if they don't like the line of questioning, defend themselves or plead their case as to why it's ridiculous. Even call it a ridiculous question, but I certainly don't. I don't take offense to somebody asking Carson Wentz a question like that.
Yeah, no, it's just, I think it brings up a point about, you know, the expectation in an era where there's a lot of player-generated content. There's a, you know, there's a lot of fan-generated content. You know, sometimes there's an expectation of, for lack of a better term, fluff questions. And I don't know if you feel that sometimes, or how do you look at it?
Not in mine. And as I say, I'm probably... In what I do now, I was probably closer to it when I was hosting and certainly when I was a reporter at TSN. And I know, as I say, all these years, you've been closer to that than I have been.
Sure.
But I know what you mean if you're talking about if you're a rights holder. I still think, and I defer to the people that we have, our insiders, the people we have covering CFL. And I know for them, I've never thought that they were covering up a story, going too soft on a story if it was something that people were talking about and an issue that had to be addressed. I mean, you know, that sounds like internal bias because I'm talking about colleagues, yeah. But I personally don't think that we have had that concern. And as I say, we are rights holders and have been for a long time exclusively covering the CFL.
Rod, I want to take you back to a lot of that off-season talk, and really the ultimate answer is the quarterback for the BC Lions, isn't it? I mean, that's a great story.
It's amazing. I can't get my head around. I'm a kid born in the 60s in Ottawa, so you know where I'm going with this. I mean, Russ Jackson was everything.
Yep.
I mean, starting here in Hamilton where I am now in McMaster, but then everything he did in the CFL as a Canadian quarterback. And quite honestly, I didn't know if anyone like him would ever come along again. Now, Nathan Rourke still has would still have to do it over the course of a long career. Russ Jackson started for 12 years in the CFL. But what he is doing now, I never thought I'd see again. And not because there wouldn't be a Canadian quarterback good enough. It's not that. It was more about opportunity. Would the stigma be so strong that Canadian QBs just wouldn't get the chance? And not only have we, you know, we've seen it with him in just his second year, and even seen it out of a Canadian university, one opportunity, albeit in Trey Ford, and I still wonder what kind of career he could possibly have. But Rourke is like nothing I don't think anyone could have imagined. The only thing I will say about this, Jim and Dave, is I got to call his first ever CFL start, and it was by accident when BC was at Saskatchewan in the opener last year that Michael Riley decided at the last second he couldn't go, and Rourke was thrown into the fire in his CFL debut, threw a pick for a pick six. Nick Marshall intercepted for a touchdown for Saskatchewan. Everything went wrong in that game, and yet they did come back, and he was part of that comeback too, even though Riley came on with, you know, half the ability to throw that he normally would have. They came back and nearly won that game. But the poise that Rourke had showed, even in that, you know, bad debut for him, was really something to remember. He didn't look like the moment was too big. He had no deer in the headlights look. And it's really gratifying to see how he has developed now, to not just show that he can play in the league, but be an absolute star, the top player right now in the Canadian Football League. And everybody just wants to see how much further he can take this, because, I mean, he's a star, and I don't know of anyone who would have predicted that at the start of the season.
Yeah, he's the kind of player, Rod, that makes you think about, you know, not only what he can do for himself and for his team, but what he can do to maybe change the game. Like, do you, it's easy to say this. We always talk about guys who change the game, but do you foresee, or could you foresee a situation where, as you talked about, the stigma that Canadians can't play quarterback because we just haven't produced them? I mean, we got one that's made the NFL in Jesse Palmer, and as you point out, you have to go back a long way to find a Canadian that's been able to dominate the CFL at that position. Do you think there's a possibility that this guy, and I guess he's got a younger brother, Curtis, who's also a heck of a talent, come out of that same Ohio University that produced Nathan, do you think that this family maybe could maybe change our perception of Canada and quarterbacks?
I think it will. I think it has already. And I bring up Trey Ford's name again, not to compare him to what Nathan Rourke's doing. Trey Ford still has a long way to go, and unfortunately he doesn't have a chance to prove it anymore right now because he's hurt, but because he comes from a Canadian university, and that's the next thing. I mean, Nathan Rourke and Curtis playing at Ohio. And I think for kids growing up, that they see that example, especially Nathan Rourke, and I absolutely think it could change things in a generation in terms of not only the ability of Canadian quarterbacks, but that perception that it has to be an American position and open. You know, I think there are already a lot of open-minded coaches about it. I know Chris Jones at Edmonton had talking to him about it, and Rick Campbell obviously is. But I think it'll make others in the game even more open-minded to give Canadian kids more of a look. And I think it's terrific. As I say, I've been a fan of the CFL for over 50 years, and I'm still shocked to see the extent of which has happened so soon in the case of Nathan Rourke and the BC Lions.
Rod, let's talk about the game you're about to call. Hamilton at home to the Argonauts, and I always go with the team that really can't afford to lose, and that would be Hamilton. If they're to lose this game, they're in deep trouble, aren't they?
I would think so. With that stunning win by Montreal, Jim, last night in Winnipeg to move 2 points ahead of them. The sad dynamic right now for the East Division, the way it appears, and it's been a few years since this has been the case, but, you know, if the season were over now, there would be a crossover, and only two teams in the East would make the playoffs. If the Argos win tonight, and they move 4 up on Hamilton, and Montreal is 2 up on the Ticats, although Hamilton did win head-to-head, it's just going to put more pressure on the Ticats to find their way into the top two, because, it's time. They still have the Argos two more times after this, so it gets a whole lot tougher, I think, for the Ticats if they don't win this one tonight and they stay and they fall to 2-7. That's the halfway point of their season. And, you know, that just doesn't project very well for their chances right now, depending on what the Alouettes do. I think, you know, the Argos are starting to build again on what they had going last year, despite all the significant changes that they've made. And, you know, if there's any kind of separation more in the East, I think you're just going to see a lot more pressure for even that number two spot, that duel right now between Montreal, who's ahead, and the Ticats. And I don't know. I look back to two games in particular. Week two here against Calgary, when Hamilton had a 24-0 lead, and then the 2 weeks later against Edmonton, when they had a double-digit lead anyway in the second half, I think heading into the third quarter, and a costly turnover has just killed them in both of those games. And we'd be talking about a different, you know, ifs and buts, candies and nuts, I realize it, but we'd be talking about a different Ticat situation if they could just hang on to a lead. Case in point again, last week in Toronto.
Hey, Rod, I know you're a guy who knows your way around a broadcast booth, and I know you got a great appreciation for the broadcasters that have come before you. I was wondering about your reaction to the Harry Carey hologram at last night's Major League Baseball Field of Dreams game. I don't know if you saw it, but it was some sort of artificial representation of the late Harry Carey singing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" in the seventh inning stretch. How do you feel about the departed brethren and sisterhood of the broadcast booth being represented in such a way?
I can't imagine Harry Carey having a problem with it. Never knew the man, but he was such a showman. You know what? Microphone in one hand, and he'd have a Budweiser in the other.
Exactly.
Part of the tradition. I still remember, guys. Remember 1987 when, unfortunately, he got sick. I think he had a stroke, and this tradition, he himself singing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." They had a whole bunch of people, a lot of celebrities, taking his spot, singing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" until he was healthy enough to come back later that season. It was just amazing to see the effect that he had, not only in Chicago and the Cubs, but in all of baseball. He's just one of the characters of the game. And no, I haven't seen it. But I can't imagine that the late Harry Carey has been gone, a long time now. I can't imagine he'd have a problem with ever the showman, right?
Very, very quickly, Rod, Schultz starts for Hamilton tonight?
He does. Mm. Dane Evans suffered a shoulder injury last week in Toronto. So Matthew Schultz, he had 3 starts last year before Trevor Harris took over from him in Montreal. But one of his starts was against the Argos, and I think he took them by surprise. They ran really well that night, too, and they beat the Argos, I think, by 3 touchdowns in Montreal. So Ryan Dinwiddie knows all about Matthew Schultz, and I can't imagine Toronto taking him lightly.
Rod, thanks very much. Really appreciate it, especially, an hour before our game time, or before the game kicks off.
Yeah, Jim, Dave, thank you, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks, Rod.
Okay, just a minute. Okay, everything's fixed now. Oh, boy.